Will the House please come to order? The Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Anderson. Anderson.
Here.
Bagby.
Here.
Barbudo. Barbudo. Berger. Berger. Blake.
Here.
Bonner. Brechtel. Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Bird. Bird. Kennedy. Carson. Carson. Childers. Cohey. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Dirks. Edmonds. Esquibel. Gilmore. Gingery. Goggles. Hales. Hallinan. Hammonds. Harshman. Harvey. Harvey. Illaway. Yagi.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Lubno.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
McKim. McKim. McComey.
Here.
Mercer.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Miller.
Here.
Millen.
Here.
Moniz.
Here.
Patton.
Here.
Peasley.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Peterson. Peterson. Philp.
Here.
Korberg.
Here.
Roscoe.
Here.
Simlick.
Here.
Shepperson.
Here.
Steward.
Here.
Stubson.
Here.
Teeters.
Here.
Thompson.
Here.
Throne.
Here.
Wallace.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Here.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
Barbudo.
Let's stand at ease for just a moment. Madam Majority Whip, would you come up, please? Madam Chief Clerk, let's keep the roll open for 5 minutes and we'll proceed on to the prayer. Okay. The prayer today is given by Representative Kathy Davison. Representative Davison.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Our kind and gracious Heavenly Father, we thank Thee for this day and for this great opportunity that we have to come before Thee as brothers and sisters in this legislature. We thank You for the great privilege that You have allowed us to leave, to have serving in this wonderful body for the state of Wyoming and for its people. We thank Thee for the privilege that we have to live in this great country and ask You to watch over those that are fighting for these freedoms and that You let them return home safely. We ask that You guide us this day, that we may make good, wise decisions for this state and for the people, for the strength and endurance to carry out this work in Your name in a pleasing manner unto Thee. Let us not forget Thee and be humbled to have the discernment and knowledge to do what is right with our hearts full of understanding and love as we go about our duties. We ask that You would guide our leaders, that they would be mindful of Your influence in our lives and make decisions according to that. Bless those that are suffering sickness or losses, and let Your Spirit be with them. Watch over our loved ones at home, that they will remain safe till we get there. And we ask these things in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Amen. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the House please come to order? Will the Chief Clerk please finalize the roll?
Barbudo. Barbudo. Byrd. Byrd. Carson. Carson. Harvey.
Excused.
Harvey, excused. McKim. McKim. Peterson. Peterson. 54 present, 1 excused, 5 absent.
The doctor of the day is Sean Ansari, Sean Ansari from UW Family Medicine. The nurse of the day is Penny Eichel, VA Medical Center in Cheyenne. Madam Minority Leader, would you come up for just a moment, please?
What mode are we in? Mr. Speaker, are we at ease or what mode are we in?
No, we are not at ease.
Okay.
But it appears as though we are.
Well, may I have a pleasure of the floor and introduce one of our favorite former legislators?
Yes, please, if you would.
My seatmate, former Representative Jerry Eichel, is here on the floor. Please come up. He forgot how to talk.
Am I ever glad to be here, Mr. Speaker, and former associates, whatever. I thought whenever I came down, I was not going to do this, and Rosie set me up. I am just so happy to see you, and I greet you. And I miss you, and I honor you, and I just hope that everything is going well for you. I told Penny's cousin 2 days ago that probably at this time of year, on that date, I looked 100% better than almost anybody in the House at the end of the session, who might be kind of tired and haggard and weary, and I'm not this year. But I know the work that you do, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here, and God bless you all.
We'd like to have a hug.
Welcome, Jerry. It is nice to see you. Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 25, 2009 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Moniz.
Messages from the Senate.
Message number 378, Mr. Speaker, the Senate adopted the Committee of the Whole report, failing the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 231, Motor Vehicle Accident, Serious Bodily Injury or Death. Ayes 12, noes 15, 3 excused. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 379, Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the like committee number 1 from House on amendments to House Bill 287. The Senate conferees are Senator Schiffer, Chairman, Senator Bebout, Senator Martin, signed Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message number 380, Mr. Speaker, House Bill 1, General Government Appropriations. The Senate has completed consideration of the budget bill. In accordance with JR 14-1G, the bill has been referred directly to a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments for final consideration by both houses with respect to both budget bills, House Bill 1 and Senate File 1, and the amendments thereto. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk. Message 381. Mr. Speaker, the President appointed Senate conferees to meet with the Law Committee, number one, with the House on amendments to House Bill 1. The Senate conferees are Senator Nicholas, Chairman, Senator Meyer, Senator Massey, Senator Peterson, Senator Townsend. Signed, Diana Williamson, Senate Chief Clerk.
Reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number two, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 108, engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
We're at that order of business. Bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 26.
Senate File 26, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to elections voter registration deadline.
We have an amendment. Oh. Okay. Senate File 28. Senate File 26, having been read two separate times. Question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Now, Senate File 28.
Senate File 28, introduced by Senator Case, an act relating to licensing of specified entertainment activities.
Senate File 28 has some amendments. Representative Zwanitzer Dan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move second reading amendment number one to Senate File 28 and ask for its favorable consideration. This addresses yesterday in this licensing law on tables kept for hire. We did have some discussion, and surprisingly, I'm not sure if I was the only one, but I actually looked up what it meant. And it doesn't involve gambling at all. It actually involves pool tables in the old days that were kept for hire. And while this may seem like an insignificant issue, there is actually a three-year state Supreme Court case in Massachusetts over this very issue. It was back in 1980 called Commonwealth versus Blackgammons. And basically, a fight had broke out in this establishment, and the only way the county could seem to punish these people was taking their license away to have coin-operated pool tables. New York is the only state I could find that still has this provision in their laws besides us. But basically, tables kept for hire, when you go through the legal history of this term, is now seemingly meant to be coin-operated pool tables, foosball tables, jukeboxes. And so the question here is, if we're going to allow bowling alleys and we're going to allow pool halls, that the county can't take away their license to operate just for being a bowling alley or a pool hall. I guess I don't believe that a county can take away their license if they keep a coin-operated a pool table or a coin-operated foosball table or a jukebox, according to the legal history on of whether jukeboxes or coin-operated tables for hire or not. So I don't think it hurts the bill either way. I just thought it was interesting that this isn't on gaming or gambling. It is on what are now coin-operated tables kept for hire. So I'd ask for your favorable. I think it stays within the scope and the intent of what the good senator or the good member across the hall was trying to do. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else for their first time? For their second time? Question being called. All those in favor of second reading amendment number one, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Second reading amendment number one has passed. Second reading amendment number two. Representative Gingrey. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I move second reading amendment number two. Very similar to the one we just did, and we can just leave it the one we just did or go a little bit further. I don't think it really matters. But what this one was doing is just deleting, repealing all of that subsection 15. So we just took out tables for hire. The only thing left is shooting galleries, and the other one was saloons. The difficulty with the saloons one is that we actually have in Title 12 a whole gamut of regulation and law on liquor licenses, which lays out exactly how cities and counties can regulate liquor licenses, which potentially conflicts with this, with the use of saloon over here. So saloon should come out, and I couldn't find anywhere anybody's regulating a shooting gallery. So it just seemed to be the whole thing was antiquated and just repeal the whole thing out of there. That's what it did.
Okay. Anybody else for the first time or the second time? All
Mr.
Those in,
Chair?
Representative Bonitzer.
I guess I'd rise against this amendment, and not that it's a great argument to put before this body, but this is the only spot in our entire statutes the word saloon actually appears that I can find. And so I don't think it makes a great deal of difference to the bill whether or not it's in there, but there are, I guess, some of us in this body who kind of like interesting archaic language in our statutes. And this would be the moment that we finally take out the word saloon from the Wyoming statutes, and I would just kind of like to keep it in there for posterity's sake.
Okay, anybody else for the first time? For the second time? Calling the question on second reading amendment number 2 to Senate File 28. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion failed. Okay. Senate File 28 having been read 2 separate times. The question is, shall the bill be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 47.
Senate File 47, introduced by the Education Committee, an act relating to the Hathaway Student Scholarship Program Administration.
We have an amendment. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 40, or Senate File 47. I'm going to ask you to vote aye. Yesterday, the proponents of the bill and several people that stood to speak in favor of the bill offered up this $50,000 on page 4, line 17, that has to do with the professional development programs for our counselors to help them try and develop some sort of way to disseminate the Hathaway scholarship requirements to 8th graders. I don't think this is necessary. And I would ask for your favorable eye or stand for questions.
Okay. Anybody else for their first time? For the second time? All those in favor of second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 47 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion failed. All those in favor, please stand. Motion passed. Senate File 47 having been read 2 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass, be read a 3rd time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Senate File 48.
Senate File 48, introduced by Senator Anderson, an act relating to game and fish regarding landowner coupon redemption period.
We have an amendment. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. I move second reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 48. And this is on a different little note. I became aware of a constituent who had a piece of ground that he owned the private property in, and there was a little small piece of state ground in that section of property. And he had someone came in and was antelope hunting and shot an antelope on that piece of ground. And the antelope was actually standing on the state piece of ground when the antelope was shot, which when he went to go redeem his landowner coupon was told that he could not redeem that coupon because that antelope was standing on the state lease that he owned. Now, I would contest to the body that if you own or if you're leasing a piece of state ground and someone shoots an antelope or a deer or whatever on that piece of state ground, you should be able to redeem that coupon because that coupon was intended to be some sort of payment for the grazing or the grass that you're leasing on that state piece of ground. So it makes good sense to me to allow the landowner to be able to collect that coupon if that antelope or deer or whatever was shot on a piece of ground that he's leasing and has currently under lease.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem, I want to make a motion to divide this amendment and make lines 1 through 14, division 1, and lines 15 through 22, division 2.
Okay, let me look at this a second. Yeah, I'll rule that it's divisible. So the first division would be lines 1 through 14. The second division would be lines 15 through 22. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Speaker pro tem.
Okay. And which would you like to consider first?
Division 1 first, Mr. Speaker. Okay. Pro Tem, and I would speak in favor of Division 1 and urge...
Point of order. Is this, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, is this amendment germane to the title of the bill?
Would the Rules Committee come up, please?
Thanks. Are you ready?
Sure.
Well, the Rules Committee's coming up to rule on that. And,
yeah. Which bill is this? This is Game and Fish.
Game and Fish.
Thank you.
The Rules Committee has ruled that the second reading amendment number one is not germane to the original title of the bill. Representative Teeters.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would withdraw the amendment.
Thank you. Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 48 is withdrawn. Senate File 48 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 54.
Senate File 54, introduced by Senator Massey, an act relating to physical therapist licensure.
Senate File 54 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 101.
Senate File 101, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to mining operations, Trona utility shot fire certification.
Representative Korberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, at this time, I would like to withdraw second reading amendment number one to Senate File 101.
Second reading amendment number one to Senate File 101 has been withdrawn. Senate File 101 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. We're at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage consent list. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move consideration of third reading consent list consisting of Senate File 60, 72, and 76.
Does anyone wish to remove any bill from the consent list? Would the reading clerk please read the consent list through the enacting clause?
Senate File 60, introduced by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to the National Guard Youth Challenge Program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 72, introduced by the Corporation Committee, an act relating to corporations regarding act amendments, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. Senate File 76, introduced by Senator Johnson, an act relating to motor vehicles regarding snowplow emergency lights, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read three separate times, the question is, shall these bills pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson, Bagby, Barbudo, Berger, Blake, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Bird, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lebno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Roscoe, Simlick, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Barbudo, Bird, Carson. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 present, 2 absent. As to Senate File 60, are there any changes? Korberg, aye to no. Hammonds, aye to no. Shepperson, aye to no. Jorgensen, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Landon, aye to no. Goggles, aye to no. Hales, aye to no. Throne, aye to no. Peasley, aye to no. Peterson, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 46 ayes, 12 noes, 2 absent. As to Senate File 72, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Peasley, aye to no. Lubno, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed, 55 ayes, 3 noes, 2 absent. As to Senate File 76, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed, 58 ayes, 2 absent.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate Files 60, 72, and 76 have passed the House. We're at that order of business. The bills on third reading and final passage, regular list. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 56. Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. According to Rule 9-3...
Excuse me. Please proceed.
According to Rule 9-3C, I would respectfully request that Senate File 56, School Finance Appropriations, be laid back one day.
Absent objection. It is so ordered that Senate File 56 is laid back for a third reading for an additional day. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 84.
Senate File 84, introduced by Senator Hastert, an act relating to crimes and offenses, aggravated assault, choking, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Oh, excuse me, Representative Stebson. Sorry about that.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move third reading amendment number one to Senate File 84 and ask for your favorable consideration. And I just wanted to bring this issue one more time before the body. In the time since we considered, this is the same amendment that we looked at on second reading. In the time since we considered it, really, even the those proponents for Section 5 have confirmed that you can prosecute choking under the language and the change in the language that we have under subrobinet 1. And I just think that it would be wise for us not to pass language and insert language into the statute that is not needed. It creates additional complexities and that are unnecessary. If we have the ability under the change to number one to prosecute the crimes, let's leave it at that and keep the law simple. So I just ask for your favorable consideration.
Anyone else for their first time? For your second time? Oh, excuse me, Representative Throne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in opposition to this amendment for the same reasons that I spoke against it a few days ago. I don't disagree that it would be impossible to prosecute the crime of choking without this language, but based on discussions with my local prosecutor, it would be easier and cleaner to prosecute choking by leaving this language in. Choking is different to the extent that it doesn't always cause harm, and the harm it does cause is internal. It doesn't leave physical external marks, and we are not creating a laundry list in the statute. We already have a laundry list in the statute. You can draw a deadly weapon on somebody and never cause them any physical harm, and it's aggravated battery. So I think we need this language in the bill to accomplish the original intent, which was to make it possible and simpler to prosecute choking. Thank you.
Representative Lubnow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When we start making laundry lists, there's a canon of construction, and if you look at Title 8 of the Wyoming statute, specifically 81103, it gives a whole list of how we need to interpret our statutes. We passed a statute that interprets our statutes. What this bill does is we have a general term in Romanet 1 that says causes or attempts to cause serious bodily injury to another intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference to the value of human life. that clearly includes choking. If we add Romanet 5, then what the argument is by clever defense attorneys is that Romanet 5 means something different than Romanet 1. And it also creates some mischief because if you hit somebody in the face with an axe, that isn't in our laundry list. And so that must not have been a crime that we intended because we didn't include it in our laundry list. And so by not passing this amendment, what we do is we give tools to clever defense attorneys to acquit their clients, which is exactly what this bill is not intended to do, but what will be the consequence of this bill. So I'd urge you to vote aye on this amendment and for the bill.
For their first time? For a second time, Representative Throne?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the good representative from Campbell County was always a better debater than I was, but in spite of that, I'll give it a shot. None of the prosecutors I've spoken to have expressed any fear that this would cause mischief if we left the language in. Quite the contrary, they have said the opposite, that it would make it easier and cleaner and clearer to juries to prosecute choking. I think we need the language in there. We already, to a certain extent, have a laundry list, as I said before. And it doesn't create ambiguity. The problem with choking is that you can choke somebody lightly and not do a thing to them and not intend to do a thing to them. So my argument is that we need choking in the statute to protect against over-prosecution of choking. Thank you.
Representative Lubnow, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't care what prosecutors think. I care what clever defense attorneys think. And sometimes I like to think I are one. And I just spoke with a former prosecutor who also told me that the more you say the same thing at the same time in a statute, the more mischief it creates. And we're not here to create mischief. We're here to create clarity. Romanet 1 covers this. We don't need to say the same thing over and over, and, well, we do this year anyway, but we don't need to say the same thing over and over and over again in our statutes.
Representative Stebson, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The mantra that we've heard is choking is different, choking is different, choking is different, but we haven't heard why. What, how is it any different than, for example, poisoning? Poisoning doesn't leave marks. Poisoning can cause bodily injury. We don't have a sub-Romanet taking care of poisoning. Why? Because it's covered. It's covered under Section I. It's covered under the language, the change we've made. We've heard from prosecutors that are members of this body and on this floor that having 5 in there is not a good idea. The undisputed argument is that I covers it. You can prosecute choking under I. You have all the tools necessary under I to do what you need to do. Let's not muck it up and include language that we don't need. So I just urge you to vote in favor of this amendment.
We are voting on third reading amendment number 1 to Senate File 84. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 1 is passed. Senate File 84, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd. Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson. Carson. Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon. Lockhart,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlich.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Carson. I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 2 noes, 1 absent.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, Senate File 84 has passed the House. We are at that order of business of request to concur with Senate amendments to House bills. The first message for our consideration is message 360 on House Bill 42. Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I move concurrence to House Bill 42 as described in message 360 and ask for your aye vote. Ladies and gentlemen, you can see how very complicated that was. We did discuss with the sponsor whether or not we should have a duel over thee and such. Decided we would decline, so I ask for your favorable consideration.
I have determined that the source of the such versus the debate began with former Senator Matilda Hansen. So just for your historical information. We are voting on the motion to, anyone else for their first time, for a second time? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 42. The majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson. Carson. Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
Aye.
Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Esquibel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales. Hallinan. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart. Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne, Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
No.
Swanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 5 noes, 1 absent.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 42. The next message for our consideration is message number 364 on House Bill 104. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence, message 364 on House Bill 104. I've talked to the sponsor of the bill. These are some minor amendments. I request concurrence.
Anyone else for their first time? For a second time? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 104. The majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Bonner.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Byrd.
Aye.
Kennedy.
Aye.
Carson. Carson. Childers.
Aye.
Cohey.
Aye.
Connolly.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison. Davison. Dirks.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Esquivel.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubno.
Aye.
Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer. Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Moniz.
Aye.
Patton.
Aye.
Peasley.
Aye.
Pedersen.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Roscoe.
Aye.
Semlek.
Aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Carson. Davison.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 absent.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 104. The next message for our consideration is message number 365 on House Bill 156. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 156, Energy Performance Contracting, and urge your aye vote. The only amendment that was made in the Senate was the addition of three words, or capital construction after cost. It probably gives a little more clarity to the bill, and I urge your aye vote.
Chairman Lockhart, did you mean or capital appropriations?
Mr. Speaker, my tongue's wrapped around my brain, and so I miss words sometimes. But or capital appropriations is a better expression.
Thank you. Anyone else for their first time? Anyone for their second time? We're voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 156. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbudo. Berger, Blake, Bonner, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Byrd, Kennedy, Carson, Childers, Cohey, Connolly, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
McKim,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Moniz,
aye.
Patton,
aye.
Peasley,
aye.
Pedersen,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp, Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
aye.
Semlek,
aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker,
aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Carson? Carson, I had you down as a conflict on House Bill 156.
Conflict.
Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 no, 1 conflict.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 156. The next message for our consideration is message number 366 on House Bill 190. Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence to message 366 found in relative to House Bill 190. Much of what the Senate did was wordsmithing. You will find on the bill in page 3, lines 15, they've taken out the language, and the obligor has not made child support payments either voluntarily or through income withholding for a period of at least 90 consecutive days prior to the determination. They have simply put in for 90 days or more, which probably makes a little bit of sense. And the second substantial change is to remove, you will find on page 5, line 3 of the engrossed form, where they have removed reference to Wyoming Statute 316103, which essentially deals with application for hearing and stay of suspension, and held the reference to the citation found in the bill, which deals for the suspension of non-payment of child support. So I would urge your support with a favorable vote for concurrence to message 366 relative to House Bill 190.
Chairman Cohey, may I switch seats with you for just a moment?
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you. On the 90 days or more, when you take out the word consecutive, does that create an ambiguity in the bill that someone can argue that it's 90 days over a one-year period that you were delinquent? I think the word consecutive was important in there. And I know that there are other parts of the statute where the word consecutive is in the definition, or at least the explanation of a time limit, and it seemed to me that that was an important part of the bill. I wonder what you think of that. Chairman Cohey.
That's one I haven't seen before. Mr. Speaker, in answer to the question, it brings up a good point. The way the construction of the amendment reads, 90 days or more could be, you know, someone could fail to their responsibilities in a 30-day time frame, be caught up, then be behind for another 30 days, then be caught up, and then over a period of a year, where they could potentially have been behind over an extended period of time, such as 365 days, where they may have been behind within that 365 days, an aggregate of 91 days, that someone, I suspect, could really make an issue of it. So, frankly, I think it does make an issue. So that might be cause for a negative vote.
Anyone else for their first time? Representative Throne.
Mr. Speaker, to find a copy of the bill, I do not believe it creates an ambiguity. It was intended to clarify that someone could not, like, make a payment on day 89 and then start a new clock. I think that was the intent of the Senate side. Oh, I see your
I'm sorry, Representative Throne, continue. I am assuming you're still speaking for your
I'm thinking in my head, speaking in my head.
I can hear you breathing, so.
Just in case nobody else could hear me breathing. Mr. Speaker, I think, you know, the DFS has rulemaking authority. If there's any ambiguity, they can deal with it in the implementation.
I will... we're a little out of order here on the rules since the chairman has spoken for the second time, but I would like to achieve some clarity on this issue, so I will allow Representative Byrd, and then I will allow Chairman Cohey to speak last. Representative Byrd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Originally, I am against this bill and still against the concept of the bill, but since we're this far on it, I would urge the body to vote against this concurrence because the language is ambiguous. DFS has decided that they are going to look at the way they implement this statute So regardless of the way we vote today, they have some plans that they're going to work out in regards to this with parents who are in the arrears on their child support. But I'm on and against this concurrence.
Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Chairman, for my second time, when I look at the original language on page 3, it does contain consecutive days. And the intent, when we were debating the bill originally and determining when the department may determine when an administrative suspension would be appropriate, it was 90 consecutive days. Now it's for 90 days or more. That raises the question of within which time period. Is that within a year? Is that within 5 years? Is that ever? And that's a big ambiguity. And as someone who's done domestic relations work over 22 years, I could argue pretty effectively that that means 90 days at any particular time period, and that wasn't the intent of the bill. So I'd urge non-concurrence.
Anybody else for their first time or their second time? Chairman Cogie.
For the extension of my second time, thank you, Mr. Speaker, pro tem. An aye vote on this would assume, forgive me, that the powers that be would assume that this would be 90 days or more in a consecutive period, but that doesn't always happen. As those of you that have been involved in domestic relations, which I certainly haven't been, the things get fairly nasty sometimes, and someone could press the point that, look, this person that the obligor has been behind here and then here and then here, so I can certainly understand the point raised earlier by one of the early speakers, but so that would be your no vote as well. So I ask you to urge caution in your vote.
Let's go ahead and vote. We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 190. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
No.
Childers.
No.
Cohey. Connolly,
no.
Kraft,
no.
Davison,
no.
Dirks,
no.
Edmonds,
aye.
Esquibel,
no.
Gilmore,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Hales,
no.
Hallinan,
no.
Hammonds,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Jorgensen,
no.
Landon,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Lubno, Madden.
Aye.
McKim.
No.
McComey.
No.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
No.
Miller.
No.
Millen.
No.
Moniz.
No.
Patton.
No.
Peasley.
No.
Pedersen.
No.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Roscoe.
No.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Stewart.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Stubson.
No.
Teeters. Thompson.
No.
Throne.
No.
Wallace.
No.
Zwanitz or Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitz or Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
No.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Zwanitz or Dan. Aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 4 ayes, 56 noes.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 190. The next message for our consideration is message number 371 on House Bill 288. Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence on House Bill 288 and urge your no vote. There were three consecutive amendments in the House or in the Senate, and they're very difficult to fully understand, and without that understanding, my clear recommendation is to vote no.
Anyone else for their first time? Or second time? Excuse me. Chairman Childers?
Well, Mr. Speaker, I guess I'd like a little bit more discussion on this. While I understand the good chairman's position on it, if you go to page 2, at the bottom of that page, I think that what it does is allow private property owners, especially with transmission lines, who are adversely affected by the location of the segment and opportunity to be heard before they issue a certificate. It doesn't appear to be, by the looks of the last amendment, that it complicates it that much for getting a certification on the power line, but it definitely addresses some problem that I think all of us have heard for, but allows the transmission certification or permitting to go forward. So I'd like some comments on that if I could.
Madam Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge you to vote no on this. I think it's something that needs to be discussed because it's not quite as simple as it appears in this amendment. And when you have notification of all property owners along the entire length of the proposal, it takes out the segmenting. And one of the reasons why the segmenting is needed on these large projects, it is difficult to get all that permitting. Not only that, it takes a long time. It can take as long as 3 years to get everyone in line. And so this gives the opportunity for those segments to start to be processed and built. So rather than accepting this, I urge you to vote no on this and allow it to go to a conference committee so that this can be discussed, because this amendment could really gut the bill. So I urge you to vote no.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Perhaps you can put my concern at rest. I represent a lot of landowners that are subject to these. The last one, the last major one I worked on, some engineer in some office that I don't think had any windows in it, drew a line across the country and said, this is where it's going to go. And it went right through the middle of my client's corral. And he could care less. And we had quite a fight. And my concern about segmentation is that they'll bolster their argument. They'll draw a line in the office that nobody sees, and then they'll build a segment right up to the edge of a property owner, and then they'll say, well, it's too late. We can't do anything because the segment's built, and now we've got to go on, and we can't move it. Maybe we built that other segment. I don't know, and that's my concern. If you can put me at rest, I'll be okay. But that is my concern, is that decisions are made, and they didn't care about my client's corral. What the heck, it's just a $100,000 pile of boards anyway. And we had a war on our hands, and I'm afraid that segmentation will facilitate more abuse of landowners.
Representative Stubson, for your first time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to speak to that last question, the issue is where does the segmentation run to and from? And there was testimony in the committee that a segment's going to be from substation to substation. It's not going to be from property line to property line. And we can make that clarification fairly easy. But what the Senate really does is they take a process. There's already a process in place for landowner notification and in the siting of the line, and that all occurs long before they apply for the certificate of authority. And so you're taking a circumstance where all the landowners have been notified, there's been all that discussion, the location of the line's already been determined, and then after it, you're mandating another process to notify the landowners again and do it a second time around. And so that issue of where the segment and what constitutes a segment is a fairly easy one to deal with, but it's not effectively dealt with by the Senate amendments.
Anyone else for their first time? Chairman Childers, for your second time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, concerning the notification part, I would have to agree and urge your no vote.
Chairman Lockhart, for your second time.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate representative from House District 50's understanding. There is notification, and these people are notified of a hearing that deals with the what's called a certificate of convenience and necessity hearing, and so they have an opportunity to be present there. The experience that the good senator from, or good representative from House District 14 experience was not one of the lines that are dealt with by the Public Service Commission. It was a federal agency that was in charge of that right away. I think there's just enough uncertainty on impact of this particular amendment that we need to vote it down now, and then we'll take a look at it later.
We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 288. A majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
No.
Barbudo.
No.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Bonner.
No.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
No.
Byrd.
No.
Kennedy.
No.
Carson.
No.
Childers.
No.
Cohey.
No.
Connolly.
No.
Kraft. Davison,
no.
Dirks,
no.
Edmonds,
no.
Esquivel,
aye.
Gilmore,
no.
Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
no.
Hales,
no.
Hallinan,
no.
Hammonds,
no.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
no.
Illaway,
no.
Yagi,
no.
Jorgensen,
no.
Landon,
no.
Lockhart,
no.
Lubno,
no.
Madden,
no.
McKim,
no.
McComey,
no.
Mercer,
no.
Meyer,
no.
Miller,
no.
Millen,
no.
Moniz,
no.
Patton,
no.
Peasley,
no.
Pedersen,
no.
Peterson,
no.
Philp,
no.
Korberg,
no.
Roscoe,
no.
Semlich,
no.
Shepperson,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
no.
Thompson,
no.
Throne,
no.
Wallace,
no.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Mercer, no to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 4 ayes, 56 noes.
By your vote, you have voted not to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 288. The next message for our consideration is message number 372 on House Bill 289. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move concurrence with message number 372 and ask for your aye vote. What this bill does, or what this concurrence does, this is the bill that we had that the bill actually only added in a few words. Essentially what it says was, if a child protection agency is able through investigation to substantiate a case of abuse or neglect, it shall notify the person suspected of causing the abuse or neglect of his right to request a hearing. And all we added in the bill was for final determination before the Office of Administrative Hearings. What the Senate did was they put in an amendment saying that you need to notify the person by first class mail to his last known address. And then they added a new subsection B, and the new subsection B says the local child protective agency may appeal an adverse determination of the Office of the Administrative Hearings. So there was what the attempt was to try to put some finality into this so that you could have a hearing in front of OAH. But then the Senate thought it was important to put in that if the Child Protection Agency lost, that they could appeal that decision from OAH up to a court of law. And the good representative that sponsored the bill can explain it probably a little bit better.
Madam Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess, Mr. Speaker, I'm not quite convinced that we should concur, but I've not heard from the sponsor of the bill yet. But, I mean, to me, the word final determination, that I thought that was put in there so that the person that was suspected of causing the abuse or neglect thought that once that was over with, that it was done. And clearly now that's not the case, because it's really not done, because if I'm assuming DFS decides that they didn't like that hearing, then they can appeal. So I'm a little confused about why we even kept in the word final, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The intent of this bill was to make sure that there was
a decision from the Office of Administrative Hearings that mattered. Because right now, the way it sits, the director of the Department of Family Services can overturn a ruling of the Office of Administrative Hearings without anybody else giving any kind of input. He can just do that. We wanted a final determination from the Office of Administrative Hearings that then stuck. It was never my intent to not allow for further review of those decisions should it be necessary. I wanted to make sure that the person who prevailed at that hearing, maybe they were unsubstantiated at that hearing, that meant something. Now, if the Office of, or if the Department of Family Services then feels they were absolutely wrong and they need to then appeal that, I did not want to break that piece of this. I thought they need to have that opportunity to appeal then to the district court, but I also felt that the person who had been substantiated against should have that same fair hearing process moving forward. I believed that that was what I had done when I put the language in this bill. The Senate felt that it was important to add B so that we were allowing for both parties to proceed, should they feel it was necessary, to district court, but on a level playing field. You wouldn't have the director of DFS being able to say, no, I disagreed with the Office of Administrative Hearings, therefore the defendant would then have to go again and be the person bringing the suit in district court to try and overturn that substantiation. So I think this actually strengthens what my intent was on the bill, which was to absolutely bring that level of fairness to these hearing processes. I didn't want to preclude anyone from being able to have further review should they feel it was necessary. And I would ask for your aye vote on this. Thank you.
Anyone else for their first time? Their second time? Chairman Gingrey? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 289. A majority of the elected members is required. The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbudo. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Aye. Bonner. Aye. Brechtel. Aye. Brown. Aye. Buchanan. Aye. Bird. Aye. Kennedy. Aye. Carson. Aye. Childers. Cohey, aye. Connolly, aye. Kraft, aye. Davison, aye. Dirks, aye. Edmonds, aye. Esquibel, aye. Gilmore, aye. Gingrey, aye. Goggles, aye. Hales, aye. Hallinan, aye. Hammonds, aye. Harshman, aye. Harvey, aye. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jorgensen, aye. Landon, aye. Lockhart, aye. Lockhart, aye. Lubno, aye. Madden, aye. McKim, McComey, aye. Mercer, aye. Meyer, aye. Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Moniz, aye. Patton, aye. Peasley, aye. Patterson, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp, aye. Korberg, no. Roscoe, aye. Semlek, aye. Shepperson, aye. Stewart, aye. Stubson, aye. Teeters, aye. Thompson, aye. Throne, aye. Wallace, aye. Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Zwanitzer Dave? Aye. Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 no.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 289. The next message for our consideration is message number 369 on House Bill 297. Chairman Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move concurrence with message number 369 and would ask for your aye vote. This was the bill, if you recall, that was trying to address a concern that came out of some case law, United States versus Hayes, that came out of the Tenth Circuit last year, dealing with the distinction of battery in the state of Wyoming. And so what the bill was doing was creating a new charge of unlawful contact. So there would be a lesser charge. So if someone touch somebody inappropriately, they did not have to get charged with battery. There was this new charge, lesser charge, of unlawful contact they could be charged with. What the Senate did on the definition of battery, they just put in at the end, because right now it reads, a person is guilty of battery if he intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes bodily injury. They added in causes bodily injury by use of physical force. And then the big thing that they did on the new law that's being created, this unlawful contact, they actually put it into two subsections. Romanette 1 is if you touch another person in a rude, insolent, or angry manner without intentionally using sufficient physical force to cause bodily injury to another. Then they create this new one, Romanette 2, where it recklessly causes bodily injury to another person. And then to clean it all up, they created a whole new subsection H for the punishment. And it's my understanding from the sponsor of this that he is urging an I, but perhaps he could explain that further.
Representative Lebno.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I urge an I. But not only me, this is, write this day down. The group that protects your rights to rifles, the group that opposes domestic violence, and the group that prosecutes people in the state of Wyoming all agree on the language of this bill.
Anyone else for their first time or second time? We are voting on the motion to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 297. The majority of the elected members is required. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Bagby. Barbuto. Berger. Blake. Bonner. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Byrd. Kennedy. Carson. Childers. Cohey. Connolly. Kraft. Davison. Dirks. Edmonds, Esquivel, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Illaway, Yagi, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, McKim, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Moniz, Patton, Peasley, Pedersen, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Roscoe, Semlek, Shepperson, Stewart, Stubson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave. Mr. Speaker, I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate amendments to House Bill 297. We're at that order of business of consideration of Joint Conference Committee reports. The first report for our consideration is Joint Conference Committee number 1 on Senate File 125. Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move for adoption, Joint Conference Committee report number 1 to Senate File 125, and request your favorable consideration. This took a lot of hours, Mr. Speaker, for this committee to deal with the issue. What we were doing is, this is with state employee compensation, and we were dealing with page 5, line 9, to strike the word evaluation and insert the word content. And that's it, Mr. Speaker. So I'd ask for your favorable aye.
Anyone else for their first time? Second time? We're voting on Joint Conference Committee number 1, report to Senate File 125. A majority of the elected members is required to adopt the report. The chief clerk will call the roll.
Anderson. Aye. Bagby. Aye. Barbuto. Aye. Berger. Aye. Blake. Aye. Bonner. Aye. Brechtel. Aye. Brown. Aye. Buchanan. Aye. Byrd. Aye. Kennedy. Aye. Carson. Aye. Childers. Aye. Cohey. Aye. Connolly. Aye. Kraft. Davison, aye. Dirks, aye. Edmonds, aye. Esquivel, aye. Gilmore, aye. Gingery, aye. Goggles, aye. Hales, aye. Hallinan, aye. Hammonds, aye. Harshman, aye. Harvey, aye. Illaway, aye. Yagi, aye. Jorgensen, aye. Landon, aye. Lockhart, aye. Lubno, aye. Madden, aye. McKim, aye. McComey, aye. Mercer, aye. Meyer, Miller, aye. Millen, aye. Moniz, aye. Patton, aye. Peasley, aye. Pedersen, aye. Peterson, aye. Philp, aye. Korberg, aye. Roscoe, aye. Semlek, aye. Shepperson, aye. Stewart, aye. Stubson, aye. Teeters, aye. Thompson, aye. Throne. Wallace.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 60 ayes.
By your vote, you have adopted Joint Conference Committee Number 1 report to Senate File 125. The Conference Committee on House Bill 190 will be Throne, Chair, Gingrey, and Bonner. It's House Bill 190, Chair, Throne, Gingrey, and Bonner. We're at that order of business of signing of enrolled acts.
Do you have that script, Pat?
Mr. Reading Clerk.
House Enrolled Act number 50, being original House Bill number 8, an act relating to certified public accountants, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 50, being original House Bill number 8. It is so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 51, being original House Bill 38, an act relating to governmental entities, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 51, being original House Bill number 38. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 52, being original House Bill number 60, an act relating to crimes and offenses, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 52, being original House Bill number 60. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 53, being original House Bill 72, an act relating to county jails, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 53, being original House Bill number 72. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 54, being original House Bill number 76, an act relating to elections, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 54, being original House Bill number 76. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 55, being original House Bill number 119, an act relating to genetic and metabolic diseases, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 55, being original House Bill number 119. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 56, being original House Bill number 138, an act relating to taxation and revenue, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 56, being original House Bill number 138. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 57, being original House Bill 164, an act relating to controlled substances, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House Enrolled Act number 57, being original House Bill number 164. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 58, being original House Bill number 223, an act relating to education, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 58, being original House Bill number 223. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 59, being original House Bill 25, an act relating to special license plates, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
About to sign House Enrolled Act number 59, being original House Bill number 25. I have so signed.
House Enrolled Act number 60, being original House Bill 62, an act relating to charter schools, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign Enrolled Act number 60, being original House Bill number 62. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 61, being original House Bill 198, an act relating to the Wheat Marketing Commission, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 61, being original House Bill number 198. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 62, being original House Bill 207, an act relating to game and fish, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 62, being original House Bill number 207. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 63, being original House Bill 41, an act relating to public assistance programs, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 63, being original House Bill number 41. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 64, being original House Bill number 71, an act relating to the film industry incentives, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 64, being original House Bill number 71. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 65, being original House Bill number 91, an act relating to fire and electrical safety, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 65, being original House Bill number 91. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 66, being original House Bill 92, an act relating to Medicaid, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 66, being original House Bill number 92. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 67, being original House Bill 225, an act relating to game and fish, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Act number 67, being original House Bill number 225. I have so signed.
House and Rural Act number 68, being original House Bill number 252, an act relating to the Wyoming retirement system, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign and Rural Act number 68, being original House Bill number 252. I have so signed.
House and Rural Joint Resolution number 1, being original House Joint Resolution number 2, a joint resolution requesting that Congress adequately fund Interstate 80, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
I'm about to sign House and Rural Joint Resolution number 1, being original House Joint Resolution number 2. I have so signed. We are at that order of business of consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that the House resolve itself in the Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The House is resolved into the Committee of the Whole. Representative Peterson.
Fellow representatives, looking at the bills that we have 2 days left, and if you look, there are 31 bills subject to reprioritization any time by the majority floor leader. And having said that, the Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is Senate File 49. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 49,
Senate File 49, introduced by Senator Massey, an act relating to the Wyoming State Board of Psychology. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Escobel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen. No, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart. Signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Landon?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 99 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment number 1, which I will move at this time and inform the body of what that is about. The first, the line on the standing committee amendment you see is strike school. You will see that throughout the bill, that we have struck the concept of a school psychologist from the licensing of a psychologist from the Act. The second change is in the amount of professional experience. A doctorate in student in psychology would be required before they could apply for a license. It had been in the bill, it was 1 year of pre-doctoral experience. We were not compelled to reduce it to that, so we moved it back up to 2 years, although we did allow that to be prior or subsequent to the granting of the degree. Finally, you see some delete entirely language. That was found to be redundant with the language that followed in the paragraph below it, and so not only do you see it deleted there, but it will also appear in the repealer. And finally, on page 11, line 19, we struck or and inserted and what that had to do with it was the definition of a psychologist. That is someone who holds themselves out to be a psychologist, and then also practices the Act. And that's what we wanted to make sure, that it was an and in there instead of an or. Mr. Chairman, I made an error in moving this bill that has been pointed out to me. I just grabbed it off my desk, and I thought it was Senate File 99, and it was Senate File 49. And so that is the bill, and a standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 49 is also what I moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So noted. Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The good chairman explained the amendments to this bill extremely well. They're excellent amendments. And at this point, if there are no questions on the amendment, I would call for the question on the standing committee amendment.
You've heard the motion on the standing committee amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, all those that are in favor of the standing committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Standing committee amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there any more discussion on the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would hand over the explanation of the bill to the good representative from Rock Springs.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate File 49 is the result of recommendations that were brought to us by the Wyoming Board of Psychology. They saw some inconsistencies and some improvements that needed to be made in their existing piece of legislation that licenses them and is in statute at this point. So they wanted to do some amendments to Title 33 and Section 27. And I'll just quickly tell you what those were. The good chairman already talked about school psychologist. School psychologist has been removed not because school psychologists have been removed, but because a psychologist is a psychologist is a psychologist. Wyoming is currently the only state that has this relatively outdated specialty license. Now, this is not to be confused with a person who works in the schools and is a school psychologist but is not licensed by the psychology board. Rather, they are certified by the Professional Teaching Standards Board. This bill has nothing to do with them. They're still school psychologists. They're still doing what they've always done, and they're still answering to the same governing board, which is the PTSB. So that's the first major change. They changed the definition of practice of psychology, and the good chair told you what that definition was, to include psychological services in consulting and legal issues. And there was a question there with, are they going to want to be lawyers? Absolutely not. But this makes it very clear that you can do custody evaluations, you can do expert witness testimony, you can do disability evaluations, similar kinds of things that are legal in nature. It also adds that, because there was a little bit of a loophole here, that, well, what if you're doing all these things, you're not a psychologist, but you're not getting paid for it? And that's how sometimes people got around that. So this adds that it doesn't matter whether you get paid or not. If you are not licensed by this board and are practicing psychology, you are indeed in violation. It also gives the board some authority to independently hire staff, executive secretary, and some personnel. They thought this would be a tremendous cost saving to them if they could do this. And then one of the things that the amendment did, and this was a cause for confusion with the bill early on, and it caused some people to have some problems with the bill early on, but the amendment that was made in standing committee addressed that. We were asking for 2 years of supervised experience. Now, what the amendment says, you do have to have 2 years, but it can be either before you receive your doctoral degree or after you receive it, or some combination of the two, and that's up to whoever is providing the supervision. And then it also provides a temporary license that's good for 30 working days if someone comes in from another state and that state has at least as strict requirements for licensure as does Wyoming. So that, in a nutshell, is the bill. I would stand for any questions, and if there are none, I would call the question on this bill.
Is there any other discussion? Question being called. All of those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 49 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Senate File 49 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File No. Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, privilege of the floor, please.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chairman, it's not often that we get somebody from here from Powder River Elementary School and also Alcova Elementary School, but we have Julia Woodward and Joan Fenster, teachers from those schools up here in the West Balcony with some of their K through 6 students. Could you please give them a welcome?
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 94. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 94, introduced by Senator Jennings, an act relating to campaign finance reporting election periods. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which recommended it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Kraft, Dirks, Hales, Illaway, Lubnow, Miller, Stubson, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Illaway, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Illaway?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 94 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. And I will allow the good representative from House District 14 to explain the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment, since it will all make sense then.
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, this is a bill to solve a technicality in the election laws, basically that allowed contributions for the primary and the general to be made during the primary period, regardless of whether a person was successful in the primary and went on to the general or not. And the effect of that could be that funding for the two elections was concentrated in the first election, and then with a loss there wasn't any way to make that right. And so this bill makes a change and says that if you note on page 2, starting at line 5, it says that contributions are limited to a campaign committee, and then the standing committee amendment changes, starting at line 9, it said $1,000 per election. That's changed to $2,400 per election, which is the federal amount. And then B says no contribution for the general election may be given prior to the date for the primary election. So that would put a stop to stacking contributions during the primary period. Then in order to clear up another technicality on page 3, lines 4 through 6, the standing committee amendment changed that. It said that there was a limitation of for any of election not more than $12,500 per election, but there is a technical problem there, so the standing committee changes that, amendment changes that, and the standing committee amendment now says for any 2-year period consisting of a general election year and the preceding calendar year of more than $25,000, which is 2 times the $12,500. And then, Mr. Chairman, on the last page, it does make the definitional statement that the primary, general, and special elections are each deemed separate elections, and that no candidate can make a contribution which violates subsection C, which is this bill, and contributions to the campaign committee are considered contributions to the candidate, and that this subsection, this bill, does not limit political contributions by parties, nor expenditures by a candidate from his or her own funds, nor from their candidates, nor from their campaign committee funds. So that's an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, I'd stand for questions. If no questions, I'd call for the question on the standing committee amendment and on the bill.
Is there any further discussion on the standing committee amendment? Representative Zwanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not necessarily speaking in favor or against the standing committee amendment, but I'm making sure we're all paying attention here and awake for what this does. We're basically changing the campaign contribution in our state from $1,000 maximum to $2,400, which is the federal limit that an individual can give a campaign. But it is, it has in the past been a very controversial issue of our law, and we've defeated such things several times. So just because nobody else got to the mic, I figured I'd better make sure we all knew this is a very large and new step that we're taking, but vote however you want.
Any Representative Bechtel.
Mr. Chairman, not to belabor the issue, but what the last speaker had to say absolutely is correct. I'm really concerned about growing this. Thank you.
Representative Conley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick question for the Standing Committee amendment that wasn't mentioned. On the Standing Committee amendment lines 15 and 17, they're deleting the or her, one of the very first times that we see in our statutes where there's a his or her listed.
Response, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, with respect to the amount, I don't think that the amount of $2,400 has been specifically at issue in this body before. We did have a bill before in which we took the $1,000 limitation, which my recollection is that it was enacted in the 80s, early 80s, and we applied the CPI index to that and came out at $3,600. And that was a bill that we brought that wasn't successful that would have raised it to $3,600. And so that would be in current dollars, that $1,000 is worth $3,600. We're not going to that limit. We're only going to $2,400. That is the federal limit, and it seems to me that it's a modest increase considering the fact that the CPI would raise it to $3,600. As to the language or her, Mr. Chairman, I would defer to the representative from the land of the camels, who I think is going to enlighten us.
Representative Lemnow.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The or her language is rules of statutory construction and convention. If you look at our statute 81103A6, it says words in the masculine gender include feminine and neuter genders, which is just the way we do things. With respect to on and for the amendment, We have lots and lots of rules, lots and lots of confusing different rules. What we're trying to do is just make these limits the same as the federal limits so that we don't have to worry about a whole series of different limits.
Is there any further discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just wondering, the term per election, page 2, line 10. I think that that's, we haven't changed the definition of election except for under Romanet 2, total political contributions, the Standing Committee Amendment says that for any two-year period consisting of a general and the preceding calendar year, the general election year and the preceding calendar year of more than 25,000. And page 3, line 4 used to say in the bill, for any election. So if we're clarifying it under Romanet 2, why aren't we clarifying it under Romanet 1?
Response, Representative Brown. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just in an attempt to answer that, the last question, the Standing Committee, what the original bill did under capital A on page 3 is there's already existing a $25,000 cap on what an individual can give in an election cycle. This took that and broke it down. What we're doing with the individual contributions, which is saying you have to make that limit in each election, it tried to split that in half and do that for the overall limitation of 25,000. What the Standing Committee amendment was introduced to do is to say, look, that $25,000 limitation still applies, but it applies for the entire election cycle, that two-year election cycle. So if I'm going to give all $25,000, I can have the flexibility of giving all of that in the primary. I'd be limited to the $2,400 or $1,000, whatever it ends up being, per candidate, but I could give all $25,000 in the primary, but then I'm done. When I come to the general, I've given my limit and I'm done. But it gives what the Standing Committee amendment was intended to do was to give flexibility with that $25,000 throughout the election cycle, whereas you are limited to the specific amount in the primary or the general for the individual contribution.
Mr. Chairman, if that's the case, then why is subparagraph B still there on page 3, lines 8 through 10?
Any response? Representative Brown? Oh. Representative Stubson?
Mr. Chairman, it is a sort of reiteration of what is in capital B that I think you may make a good point. I think we may be able to actually take that capital B under subromanet 2 out. But it does, I guess, just reinforce that you can't give, exceed the individual limitations. But I think you might be right. I think that might be able to come out.
Mr. Speaker?
Well, Mr. Chairman, it is Romanet, or it's subparagraph B on page 3 is inconsistent with subparagraph A, but now it says you can give all 25,000. Well, if B is taken out, it would say you could give all 25,000 in the primary year, and that's certainly different than the intent of the bill without the Standing Committee amendment, which limits you to the 12-5 per election, which is the general and the primary. So what is the rationale for allowing you to front-end load the election in the primary?
Representative Brown.
Mr. Chairman, I think the answer is that the first part of this Romanat 1 pertains to contributions to a candidate for political office. And that is a candidate, but there are multiple candidates that are seeking office. And Romanat 2 addresses total political contributions. And we didn't want to say, in Romanat 2, we didn't want to say that you're limited to $12,500 per election and how much money you could contribute to candidates, multiple candidates. So we said $25,000 so that you can aggregate either in the primary or the general, subject to the limitation of no more than $2,400 per election. Or, I'm sorry, per candidate.
Representative Ledno.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In response to the good speaker's question, with respect to whether or not we wanted to do $25,000 in the primary or $12,500 in two elections, the discussion was that there may be people who want to donate to primary candidates and get the best primary candidates for their particular party in the primary and spend the $25,000 there in party against same party elections rather than party against other party elections. And we didn't feel like the artificial $12,500 restraint was a good idea for elections and for freedom of elections. If we were going to put a cap, we ought to put a cap and let the people in the two-year period spend the money in the elections they chose.
Is there any more discussion on the standing committee amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of standing committee amendment number one, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Standing committee amendment number one has passed. We're back on the bill. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the committee of the whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 94 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no.
No.
We're going to have to switch here a little bit. Those in favor, please stand. Please rise. Senate File 94 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 12.
Mr. Chair? Whoa.
Representative Connolly, you may have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I have privilege of the floor?
You may have privilege of the floor. Please proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, may I introduce students here from the University of Wyoming, Central Wyoming Community College, LCCC, and Northwest Community College, who are here for Educational Access Day. And could I have you all stand up, please? Okay. Friends, these are participants in the TRIO and Gear Up program. These students are often first-generation college students, students with limited income, students traditionally underrepresented in higher education, and students with disabilities. And I would also encourage you to drop by the Hirschler building to see some posters of their tremendous research. Thank you.
Welcome to the House. We certainly appreciate you being here today. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're going to move Senate File 12 down under 134. and move Senate File 135 below 112.
The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 107. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 107, introduced by Senator Ross, an act relating to Court Supervised Treatment Programs Act. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended do pass with amendments. Ayes, Baby, Barbudo, Kennedy, Gingrey, Patton, Peasley. No, Mercer, Korberg, excuse, Throne. Sign representing Gingrey, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 107 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. I'll just tell you, the Standing Committee Amendment looks long, but it really doesn't do a whole lot. We were using the term governmental entity, and we just switched that to city, town, or county. It leaves in all the other ones that we had there. Gives a definition of continuum of care. It was something that was being... It was referenced in the bill, so we thought we should have a definition. There was some concern that there was a section in there that we needed to define who the person was. There was a reference that kept being to a person, so we put in which person we meant. We had some words in there saying ensure, and we meant strive for. And I think we added in, over on the second page of the amendment, all those U.S. code numbers are confidentiality statutes, just saying they had to provide some data back to the state, and it was telling them to provide the data, but we don't need to know their names. We just need to know, the data about that person. And I think that's about most of all the amendments on the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'd ask for your aye vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Do you wish to address that?
Is there any more discussion on the Standing Committee Amendment? Question being called. All those in favor of the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Standing Committee Amendment has been adopted. Madam Minority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to give you just a brief background on this bill. This bill came about because of a management audit. From the management audit of the drug courts, they found that there were some uniformity issues, and so they had some questions that they felt needed to be answered. As a result, we had a drug steering committee that met to try to answer some of the questions that came out of the management audit. There were also some judges who were not comfortable with the word court. Actually, drug courts in Wyoming started in 2001. And what this bill does is to try to answer the questions of the management audit and of the steering committee. And I want you to note that a group of individuals got together, the Department of Health, the providers for treatment in drug courts, the Chief Justice, and a former drug court judge who is now a senior advisor to the governor, and also the director of the Mental Health and Substance Abuse. And this bill is a result of that. It took a lot of working together to come to the consensus how we can best serve people with substance abuse problems. Are drug courts for everyone? No, not necessarily. And this bill addresses that. What I'd also like to tell you is that I'm going to probably use the term drug court because that is what's used at the federal level. But we have taken out the word drug court in this bill, saying the court-supervised treatment program, because of the judge's concern that this should not be a court. I would like to tell you that drug courts have been successful. There are many research that have been done nationwide. In one of the nationwide researches, they found that 75% of drug court graduates remain arrest-free at least 2 years after leaving the program. As more research has been published on the effects of drug courts on virtually all other interventions for drug-abusing offenders combined. There's an esteemed treatment research institute at the University of Pennsylvania that concluded, to put it bluntly, we know that drug courts outperform virtually all other strategies that have been used with drug-involved offenders. This bill, if you look on the front, will tell you exactly what is advocated in authorizing the judges to participate in court-supervised treatment programs. Judges can decide if this is a tool that they want to use. They do not have to, nor are they required to. Safeguards are put into the bill so that there is coverage of the auditing of their programs, not only for the participants. And when I'm saying participants, I am not saying the identification of those participants. I'm talking about the numbers that they are covering and how they are covering them and what needs to be done as far as the accountability of the program. If you look on page 4, Romanet 5, what this alludes to is the juvenile drug courts. There are different kinds of drug courts. I had a handout passed out to you on the drug courts, and I don't know if you're like me, you may have misplaced it, but if anyone would like another copy, I would be glad to give it to you. And it tells you what kind of drug courts that we have in the state of Wyoming. At the present time, we have adult drug courts, we have juvenile and family drug courts, we have tribal drug courts, and we have one DWI drug court. There are eligibility requirements for the participants in a drug court. They must have pled guilty. The participant must submit to a substance abuse evaluation. The participant is monitored by supervised probation. The participant cannot be accused of a violent felony. The prosecuting and defense attorneys must agree to allow participation by the accused. The participant must consent to participate in the drug court program, and the local drug court team must agree to admit the participation. There is far more coverage and far more supervision through a drug court program to help these participants to be successful. If you look in the section on definitions, on court-supervised treatment program, it gives you the definitions on page 3. I'm not going to read these all to you, but it does. I do want to show you that there is a program team that meets and creates, according to this Wyoming statute 713-1609A, recidivism has been successful in these programs, and it is again defined. It tells you about the referring judge. There is also, if the participant is not following the treatment program, there is revocation, and the referring judge does not do the revocation. Within this bill, the judge, another judge is brought in because the participating or referring judge is part of the team, and it was felt that it would be better to have a different judge for the revocation. If you turn to page 7, it tells you the goals of the program, and usually we do not include these in the bill, but because it was so important for the understanding of this concept, it is placed in here. If you turn to page 7, it will tell you it reduces recidivism to ensure program retention and graduation, sobriety of the participants, monitor the services provided. On page 8, it gives you the standards for the attorneys and judges, and it gives you what they must follow and who sets that up. On page 9, the programs must apply every year for the grants to run these programs. And within the programs, they are run through courts, through city or municipal courts, through the circuit courts, through district courts, and also through 501c3s and through tribal courts as well. And on page 9, the
Department, subsection B, the department shall determine whether an application for a program meets the qualifications as specified in statute and the rules and regulations promulgated by the department pursuant to subsection C of this section. On page 11, it gives you the establishment of court-supervised treatment programs. On page 12, participation in court-supervised treatment programs conditions and extended probation. And this allows also people who are on parole to participate in this program. I'm not going to go any further through this. If you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. And if you want to be provided a handout that gives you a little bit more information, I'll be more than happy to do that. I do want to tell you, it has been successful in my community. My community was the original drug court in under the federal program. And what happened is when the federal program ended and we as a state put it in our statutes in 2001, it resulted in the need for this type of legislation. I urge you to support it. It is an important part of the treatment for people with addiction problems. It has been very successful, not only in our state, but nationwide. And I urge you to support this legislation. Thank you.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and my good colleague from over in the southwest part of the state. I would like some additional information. We were given a lot of information at the committee level, but none of it really dealt with facts, like how much was recidivism reduced. We weren't given any hard numbers that I could see regarding any of that information. So I'd be interested in that. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Response, Representative Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I do have some information on what has happened and occurred in the Wyoming State Drug Court program. Participant retention in the program and completion is at 55%. Participants in program recidivism is 87%. So we do have these, and if you would like them, I'll be more than happy to share them with you.
Representative Corbett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand corrected. We did receive that information. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on this bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Gingrich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 107 pass the Committee of the Whole, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Senate File 107 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 14. Reading clerk will please read the bill.
Senate File 14, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to cultural heritage, tourism, and state historic sites. This bill was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Bonner, Brown, Childers, Conley, Davison, Yagi, Millen, Shepperson, Thompson. Signed, Representative Childers, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Jorgensen, Pedersen, Phelps, Stewart, excused, Harshman signed, Representing Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 14 do pass, and I will explain the bill. Ladies and gentlemen, cultural heritage tourism was assigned to the Travel, Recreation, and Wildlife Committee as an interim, and cultural resources, by the way, as an interim study topic. We held three meetings concerning this topic and drafted legislation to address the needs identified by state parks and historic sites and trails. They presented us with a request for $15 million. And those groups, in conjunction with the legislature, we narrowed that down, and there was a healthy haircut given over in the Senate. And basically what this bill does is we spend $650,000 to prevent some sites falling apart and also protect them from vandalism. We spent $331,000 to stabilize and begin restoration activities on the quartermaster building and post hospital school building at Fort Steele. Both of them are in danger of collapse if we don't do anything soon. They've already done three other buildings. $100,000 is to conduct stone stabilization and restoration at the Piedmont charcoal kilns. And those, Piedmont is one of the few kiln complexes left in the country where the domes of the kilns are in place. The domes are most definitely, potentially, going to collapse if we don't do something, because there hasn't been any maintenance on it. There's one that's already collapsed. There's two remaining, I believe, or three. I have to think about that. But anyway, that $100,000 will take care of that. And incidentally, the committee did hear that, and I think all the committee was in support of doing this. Also, $219,000 to install electricity, fencing, and reacquire original equipment for the Carissa mine and mill. The electricity will allow the state parks people to install a security system and lighting for the Carissa complex, and fencing will also help define the site boundaries and help better secure it. The original equipment for that mine, some of it is in private ownership, so what we're trying to do that before that equipment disappears. And then, of course, the security on it is important. I think most of you read in the newspaper not too long ago that there's been over $30,000 of vandalism already on that, and they've been restoring that area for display. And I think it's important that we go ahead and install that system. And then lastly, $350,000 to continue implementation of the Open to Interpretation project that was first put forward and was Senate File 60 in 2007. And basically, as we're trying to do with cultural and historic sites in the state of Wyoming, is to better interpret them and to improve the tourism in the state. Admittedly, monies are tight. I won't argue with that. But what we're proposing with the $650,000 is no different than what we did with a couple of paintings in this room and the other end of the hall. No different than what we're doing with the lighting overhead. Cultural tourism, this body, and the other end have decided that it's an important issue that needs to be done. And I would encourage you to pass this bill. I would answer any questions.
Chairman Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't have any argument with the bill as a whole, but I need a little instructions in mathematics. In Section 1, you're appropriating $650,000. And in, on the next page, you're appropriating a total of $1 million. I don't see how those jive. And then on the goldenrod, Senate File 14 is expressed as a $1 million appropriation. Where does the 650 fit in? And I don't have that math straight in my mind.
Response, Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the $650,000 is the combination of $331,000 Romanex 1, $100,000 Romanex 2, and $219,000 for Romanex 3. And then in subsection B, there's an additional $350,000 for the interpretation in the bill. And that's what the bill is.
Mr. Chairman, I understand that comes to $1 million. That's what's in the profile on the goldenrod. What do we do with the 650 that's on page 1,000?
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd have to go back and look at the goldenrod. I did assume that appropriations had included it in there because the Senate appropriations approved this subsection for Section 1, both with A and B. But I'll have to go back and look. But again, I would encourage you to pass this bill.
Majority Whip.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, and for my good colleague from up in Park County, is this in addition, do they have some enterprise funds? Do they have an enterprise account where they get from fees? So this money is in addition to that, or is this specifically aimed at just the historical, the cultural tourism part of the program, Mr. Chairman?
Response, Chairman Childers.
Give me a moment.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Not so much a question, but if I understood the good representative from House District 10, and I don't know what's on the goldenrod on the total, but the 650 is the sum of Romanets 1 through 3, and then it's just an additional appropriation totaling $1 million. And then the only question I would have is, what's the timeline for completing these projects, and is that the reason why these unexpended, unobligated funds as of June 30th, 2010 do not revert to the general fund?
Response, Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, for all three of those projects, especially for Romanex 1 and 2, they have not got the final bid on that, if memory serves me. So there is some flexibility on the fund, and those funds were not going to be reverted back to the general fund. And the good majority floor leader did point out that Senate 514 Historic Sites Appropriation, there is $1 million in there, which would be the $650,000 and the $350,000 appropriation.
Representative Madden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I need to have an explanation on the second 300 or the $350,000 under on page bottom of page 2 and top of page 3, where you talk about $350,000 for interpretation. Is there another way you can explain that besides some of us that are more challenged when it comes to culture? I don't know what you mean by interpretation, and I also to me it looks like the expenditures in part A are to one degree or another, the 650 is, almost absolute necessities. But I don't understand this part B and what you're going to get out of $350,000 for interpretation. Thank you.
Response, Chairman Childers.
So, Mr. Chairman, the $350,000 is not unlike what the number of the federal agencies, in particular the Bureau, I can't say it, but the one that manages lands that's not in the national forest. But anyway, there are interpretation signs of various historic sites that they give details of what those, what the interpretation of both cultural sites and historical sites are. And that money is to use to expand that whole program to develop signage and other things to allow, people both within the state and outside the state to be able to recognize those sites and either go to them or read about them.
Representative Shepherdson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And just to clarify that $350,000 further, I do have a handout that details that out, but it's basically just referencing existing planning documents, evaluating visitor comments, surveys, working with the public, and informational things for the visitors to the park. And I do have a sheet on that if you would like a copy on that. Thank you.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I heard the question, can I understand this exactly? Let me give you a very specific site, and I can't say its name. All I can say is that Indians have inhabited this site for between 7 and 9,000 years, that the cliffside, when it was excavated by our state archaeologists a number of years ago, that the pamphlet that goes with this site, which is considered the interpretation, the archaeologist who now oversees this site from the University of Wyoming told me that the existing pamphlet would probably be a guided walk of about 15 minutes. Now, you can put him under contract, and he can write a brochure that would have an accompanying signs that would go with it that would give you an hour's worth of interpretation at this site, very concretely telling about the various generations, all of the pictographs that exist, who put them, what archaeologists know about it. That is an interpretation development so that people, when they go to these sites, they just don't look at it and go, huh, I wonder what this pictograph is. And so at each of our sites around the state, you can have much fuller interpretation. It can be everything from signage to videos that would be made about it. For $350,000, mainly what you're going to get is very specific interpretation at very specific sites, hiring consultants who can come in and tell you what you can do so that people will have a much better understanding of what happened at that site and a much better experience while they're there.
Is there any other discussion on the Senate file? Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I tell you what you run into with things like this is what caught my eye was Fort Steele, and they have another fort up there called Fort Halleck, and it's set at the base of Elk Mountain. And you try to get up there, there used to be old buildings there, and there used to be old graves. And they actually had a massacre at one time of people that was in that fort. Well, a lot of that land was put up for sale. And it was sold off, and it was sold off. And there's a person that has quite a lot of money. And what he did was he bought up the old Fort Halleck and all the land around it. So now if you want to go up and see Fort Halleck, it's almost impossible. And there is just so much history in that area. One time when I was in the fifth grade, and I know a lot of you can't remember back that far, but I went to an auction sale, and I bought a book, and it was called 4 Years with the Army of the Potomac by Regis D. Trobriand. And at that time, I was studying the Civil War, so I was really interested in it. And so I took it home. And I had it on my shelf for years and years. And then one day I picked up Gay Alcorn's book, The History of the Encampment Valley. And I'm thumbing through that book, and there was a picture of Regis D. Trobriand. And he had actually, in that book, he had gone all the way through 4 years of the Civil War. His dad was a general for Napoleon, so he had military training. And he was wounded at Gettysburg, and anyway, what struck my eye was there was his picture. I about fell out of my chair because he was the first commander at Fort Steele, Wyoming, the very first commander. So that's why it is so important for us to preserve these historic sites and on and for the bill.
Is there any further discussion on the Senate file? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 14 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
Senate File 14 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 88. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 88, introduced by Senator Perkins, an act relating to restricted drivers, ignition interlock devices, and required use thereof. This bill was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary, which recommended it do pass. Ayes, Begbie, Barbuto, Kennedy, Gingrey, Mercer, Patton, Throne. No, Peasley, excused, Korberg. Signed, Representative Gingrey, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which recommended that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Hammonds, Harshman, Pedersen, Phillips, Stewart, excused, Jorgensen, signed, Representative Berger, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Gingrey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that Senate File 88 do pass, and I turn over the explanation to the representative from House District 27.
Representative Hammonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I really want to thank the Chairman of Judiciary and the committee for all of their hard work. As many of you may be aware, this particular session and last session, we've worked extensively on bills with regard to individuals in Wyoming who drive under the influence of alcohol. And unfortunately, we've run into obstacles on the other side of the building, and those bills last year and indeed this year have met with defeat. And so you have a bill in front of you, Senate File 88, and the only reason it says Senate File is I personally started to work on this bill last May, and it was a House bill, but through the good efforts of the lovely representative from the town that everybody keeps saying has two humps, the camels, and if I say lovely, I think you all know who I'm talking about, she informed me that a member of the Senate had just recently started working on it. And so that individual, we strategized and decided that if this body ever had success with the DUI bill, that if it started in the Senate, which is usually our main obstacle, we might have some success. And so the bill you see before you today was originally a House bill, but strategically we started it in the Senate, and in fact it passed through. The reason I decided to take this approach for Senate File 88, which is the requiring use of ignition interlock devices, is because there was, as in many of your communities, over the years, last year there was a horrific accident in which a wonderful couple from one of the towns I represent was killed in a head-on collision by a driver who was impaired and had in fact been found guilty of previous DUIs. So when I started thinking about what can you do about that, at the same time I received a pamphlet from NCSL that talked about ignition interlock devices. And I thought, you've got to change behavior, and you've got to keep drunks off the road. And my feeling is that individuals who are impaired cannot make the good decision themselves to not drive. In fact, all of you, I'm sure, in reading your local newspapers, if they happen to publish those people who are driving under suspension and that they're caught again, many, many individuals in our state who have had their licenses suspended because they were drunk do not make the choice to stop driving. What they do is they continue to drive. And so you see the bill before you because, quite frankly, if you are drunk, if we adopt this bill, you will not be able to drive your car. It will be physically impossible. With an ignition interlock device, it will keep you off the roads. In the other states that have adopted a similar program, the statistics tell us that Wyoming can expect to decrease DUIs by 50 to 80%. We can expect at least half of those drunks to be off of our roads. That is what we can expect if we adopt that bill. And so what I want to do is to carefully go through the bill with you, because should we pass it, which I am very hopeful that we will, you will be able to go back to your communities and explain to the residents in your community exactly what you have supported. And so page one begins with the basic enactment clause telling what the bill contains. If you turn to page two, you will see in section in 62106, homicide by vehicle, people who are convicted of aggravated homicide are excluded from this particular aspect of an ignition interlock device, and so that's all that that does. The next section, 315233, is dealing with the penalties. And so this is the heart of the bill. As you turn to page three, this itemizes what the exact penalties are. This is modeled after New Mexico. The first you have, this is existing law, your license is suspended. Throughout the bill, wherever you look and there are lines with, there are the words without lines underneath them, that's existing statutes. So once your license is suspended, for a first conviction, this is in Romanette 2, for a first conviction, if your blood alcohol content is 0.15 or more, then you will have to have an ignition interlock device placed on your car for 1 year from the date of conviction. Romanette number 3, for a second conviction, you will have an ignition interlock device for 2 years from the date of conviction. And Romanette 4, for a third conviction, you will operate your vehicle with an ignition interlock device for 3 years. Again, this is modeled after New Mexico, which has had, they had a 66% drop in DUIs in their state once they implemented this. Okay. Then the next pages just talk about continuing about how that is done on page 6. If you go to, it also goes up to the fourth conviction and subsequent convictions. Those just itemize. Once you get on page 6 to your fourth or subsequent conviction, this is a critical part in that you have the ignition interlock device for the rest of your life. Personally, if you're on your fourth conviction, I hope you're in prison. But nevertheless, if you have a fourth conviction, you have an ignition interlock device for life, except for every 5 years, you can have it reviewed by the court. And in fact, if the court finds out that for whatever reasons that you present to them that, you know, previously you were an alcoholic and you've demonstrated for 4 years that you haven't had a drink, the court can consider that and would take the ignition interlock device off. So that's what you do with a fourth conviction. The section on page 6 at the bottom, 316.102, this is existing language in this particular one. The only thing that's been added on page 7, this is the whole part that deals with if you refuse to submit to a chemical test. And so the only thing they've added to existing language is that you would only drive vehicles equipped with an ignition interlock device if you're found guilty for this aspect. Then as you continue on the bill, on page 8, you see language that is stricken. This is simply a cleanup and conforming to this new concept. And then on page 9, this also goes hand in hand with the existing language in statute. And so that's all it's doing is blending the mandatory ignition interlock device with our existing language. That's all that is. And then on pages 9 through 10, everything that we've had so far in the bill repeats, but it repeats for youthful offenders. And so this, it just says this is how it applies if you are a youthful offender. Okay. On page 10, we begin with definitions. And I think this is where I want to just briefly explain to you how these work. They're installed in your vehicle, and they contain a data logger. So that every time you blow into this, if you in fact have alcohol in your system, your data logger records that. Now it was asked in committee, and I think it's the first question that when I was working on it, okay, so it's against the law for me with a suspended license and an ignition interlock device. I can't drive when I'm drunk, so I blow in this. I'm clearly drunk. So have I already proven to somebody that, you know, I've broken my period that I'm in? You're not driving. You're sitting in your car. You're not driving. So you have not broken the law. But what happens is it records that. And then what my good co-sponsor and I talked about is we're really trying to change behavior so that so many people, when they drink, they don't know it, their own capacity and how they can function. And so what will happen is they blow into this. There will be a record of what they've done and how they've been drinking, but we would hope they're changing their behavior and they'll begin to realize, I can only have one beer and I really shouldn't be driving. If I have two beers, I absolutely can't start my car. If I have a six-pack, I'm not going to be driving until 6 hours from now. And so those are the kinds of things that people are going to learn with this. Meanwhile, it's reported to the department and it's also reported to your probation officer so they can work with you about the patterns they see in terms of your use of your vehicle and attempts to use it. And we can talk about further assessment, but that would be them working with you. So that's what the logging device does. It has to be certified by the department, the calibration and maintenance. There's a whole system. We have existing ignition interlock device law, but it is voluntary. If you want to say, I have a DUI, this is existing law. You have a DUI, but you want to be able to drive to work, you can go and have one of these put on your car. It's optional. And so much of the language that we have in here is an existing law in terms of having these kind of devices available and keeping them calibrated. But they have to periodically go and have it recalibrated, and the logs are taken off, so they provide a monthly report. And that's what the language continuing on 12 is about, the calibration and the service, and that's to guarantee that they don't tamper with it and that there's continues to be oversight with it. These devices happen to cost about $70 a month, and so that's and the installation is about $100-$110. Which brings us to page 13, little Romanette 7. This is the part that deals with those individuals who, the indigent individuals who do not have $70 a month to pay for it. And so we copied what New Mexico did. They provided a fund so that those individuals who qualify for food stamps, there's a fund in which the device will be paid for in their vehicles. All right. Let's continue. The most critical word in the whole document is on page 14, on line 3. See where the may struck out and it put in shall? That's the difference. It's not a mandatory program. It's a program that they must do. It's not their choice as to whether they want to do it or not. And on page 15, this was one that we worked out over on the other, with the body on the other side of the building. It has to do with your employment. This is contained in Romanette 2. In Romanette 2, so many people in Wyoming have driving involved in their employment. And so we talked about it, and we tried to find, actually I've reviewed about 26 different states' laws with regard to this, and we tried to zero in on those states that have rural populations that might have driving involved in their employment. And so what you'll see on this is, on lines 10, 11, and 12, a licensee may operate an employer's vehicle without an ignition interlock device installed during normal business activities and not used by the licensee for non-business purposes. So if you're one of those individuals who has a car that comes with your job and you get to drive it to work and you get to take your kids to soccer games and you get to also use it in employment, you cannot use it without an ignition interlock device. But if you're an individual who drives your pickup to work and then you have to drive during the day and it's one of your employer's vehicles, you do not need an ignition interlock device for that. And our assumption is that your employer is watching you to make sure you're sober at work. That's the idea. And we wanted to have it workable for these individuals. It's critical that they continue to be able to work. Then as you continue, at the bottom of the page, it deals with suspension and revocation of ignition interlock licenses. And you go on to page 16. You'll see on Romanette 2, it talks about monthly reports. That's the one where it says your monthly reports from a licensee's ignition interlocking device data logger indicate that the licensee is habitually attempting to operate a vehicle while impaired. Then his probation officer and perhaps the judge needs to deal with this individual. Now we come to the section where everybody, you've all heard and you've seen movies where somebody leans over and blows into the device for somebody. This next section is the one that deals, or maybe you haven't all seen that movie, but this deals with that. 317-404 deals with the driving without the interlock device and the punishment that you obtain if this is discovered. Under number one, you're not supposed to do it. You can't drive any vehicle unless you have a certified ignition interlock device in it. We heard someone talk about going out and renting a car. Well, clearly you're circumventing the law and you are in direct violation of the law. That absolutely is not acceptable. Under B, nor blow or solicit another to blow into an ignition interlock device. So If you ask somebody to do it, then these are the consequences that would happen to you. On the next page, 17, little Romanet I, for a first offense, that lays it out what's going to happen to you. And it also kicks you into a situation where you have to keep the ignition interlock device for a longer period of time, which from my perspective is the greater penalty, that you have to continue with it for a longer time. And for a second offense, basically what this does is it kicks you up to say, hey, you're drunk, and we know you're drunk, and so if you're a person with a first offense, it kicks you up to a second offense. And you go on to page 18, Romanet 3. Again, you have another year with the interlock. The financial amounts and all of those are pretty much with existing language and with New Mexico statutes. On 19, and I think this is important, this is your exception. What if you can't get your car to go because you're drunk and you got to get your wife to the hospital because she's going to have a baby or any emergency like that? That is permissible at that point to have somebody else get the vehicle to go. And then on section 2, the repealers, those are all old language about verification of installation. It's language that exists in the bill, and so they were just taking out the old language in existing statutes. There, section 3, there is $25,000 taken from the highway fund, which is to help with the indigents. There would be about $60,000 raised in fines, and so that would be the total pool that would be available for the payment and the monthly payment for those individuals to have it. The expectation, this goes into effect July 1st. In 2009, and all the research that I've done, they absolutely know, they've researched this in all of these other states. We know that interlock devices reduce recidivism with first offenders and with chronic DUI. So if this body is serious about keeping individuals who are drunk off the roads and driving their vehicles, this, with the use of technology, is the way to do it. I stand open for questions.
Representative Lebnow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I commend the good sponsors for bringing this bill. This is the first scientifically based, successful program that we've had brought in front of us in a long time. We've amended the DUI statutes to ramp up the penalties in 82, 84, 85, 87, 87 again, 89, 95, 2002, 2003, 2005, effective 2006, and we've had a bill to ramp up the penalties in every session when I've been here. If you look at the studies show that it's certainty of punishment, not severity of punishment, that deters criminal behavior. And so ramping up the penalties has an effect, but it's a negligible effect. This bill and this program gets to the root of the problem, which is if you're drinking, you're not driving. And our biggest problems, although we have a lot of first-time offenders, but our biggest problems are in the recidivists, and this bill addresses those concerns. So I just want to say I commend the bringers of this bill or the sponsors of this bill, and I just can't say I think enough good about the bill and the thought that went into this bill. And thank you very much.
Representative Shepperson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I, too, applaud the efforts of everyone involved. And I just have some questions that I need clarified. Is there a provider in the state that does this? That does these devices? Where are they going to be at? I heard about the cost, the $70 a month to maintain them, the $110 to install. But where are these people going to have to go to get that device put in? I also have a question about people who have multiple vehicles. I guess to fit this bill, if we have Joe out here who has a truck, and then a big truck that he uses to pull horse trailers with, and a car, multiple vehicles, to drive those, he's going to have that in all vehicles. And so then is that cost going to go, you know, 70 times however many vehicles a month, which is a question of mine. The other question is on enforcement. Do they, I know they do the data download on these, do they have to check in with that data monthly, and is that how they check to make sure that people are complying with that? And then if they do, if they are downloading that data monthly, what happens when you have Joe, who's a 23-year-old college guy, and he's having fun, and he's, you know, lets his college buddies use his car, and they go and blow in it just for the fun of it? I guess, is that just all on his responsibility, up to him? And then my other question is, if we have, we have a lot of small businesses where I'm from where people have, for instance, welding trucks that they use for business, and I saw that section in there regarding the company trucks, but I'm still confused on that. If they have a welding truck that they are allowed to take home at night, they don't, they aren't supposed to use it to drive their kids, you know, to the soccer game and stuff, but they drive that company vehicle to get to and from work and at work. Whose responsibility is it to put that device in that truck, or do they have to have that device in that truck? So if I could just get some clarification on those points, I would really appreciate it. Thank you.
Madam Majority Whip.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I too just have a couple of questions. And on page 7, I just want to make sure that I understand that now if you fail to submit to the tests, you not only lose your driver's license, but now you also have to have, all of your vehicles have to be equipped with the ignition interlock device. I just want to confirm that that is the case. And how long would they have to have the device on? It, I just want to, is it the same length of time as they lose their driver's license? That was my question there. And then over on page 9, again, I guess this deals with the penalties for refusal to submit. And it says suspension of that, of subsection A, it shall be considered a conviction. So does that conviction actually go on your record that you've been convicted of DWI, or does that just relate to you've got to have the device on for a certain amount of time? I'm just not sure if that means you actually have convicted yourself without due process. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dan Swanitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two more questions to throw into the mix. I generally support the bill and the idea. It's just it's a really big step, but it's probably a necessary step. The first question is, are there enough providers in our state who are willing to do this? Are we going to make sure there's one, maybe two in each town? Or is the department going to set a cost on each one of these devices, so if there's only one provider within 200 miles, they can set whatever price on these they want? Maybe that's a rules and regs thing. I just wanted to know if that had ever been addressed. And second, my question was on how these devices work. If there is an allowability that if you're below a BAC of 0.08, you have some Listerine, or you mess up one time, you have one of these for a year, does that still enable you to have a drink after work with your friend? If it's one drink and your BAC is 0.02 or 0.03, technically that's still legal to drive. Does it still allow you to operate a vehicle at that level, or would that harm your chances of losing your license? And I hadn't heard that explained yet. So those are my two questions for the mix.
Madam Majority Whip.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for your latitude and a follow-up question. I did have one other question. And it actually is kind of a concern of mine, because I think it deals with a fairness issue, and that is the part of the bill that deals with we're going to pay for the indigents. It seems to me that if they have the money to own the car, license the car, drive the car, drink the alcohol, I mean, we don't pay for their fines, so I'm not sure why we just don't pay for everybody's interlock device or no one's. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Before I call for responses from Representative Hammonds, are there any more questions on Senate File 88? Hearing none. Pardon me, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering about the time periods for the use of the device on page 3. 1 year from the date of conviction on the first conviction. I realize this is somewhat of an enhanced penalty because the blood alcohol content is 0.15 or more almost twice the limit. But typically what we see on penalties are 6 months probation, jail time, some of it suspended, and the 6 month suspension. The why is it 1 year and not 6 months, which is consistent with a misdemeanor penalty of 6 months in jail, up to 6 months in jail? Is there some reason that New Mexico, for instance, has a year rather than 6 months, and do other states have that 6 month period or a 1 year period? Your suspension for your driver's license, if you were convicted, if you had a blood alcohol content of 0.15, you would serve on a first offense a 3 month suspension of your license, but you can get a probationary driver's license if it's your first offense and you can drive under the terms of that probationary license. So it's three times longer than your license suspension. I just wonder why.
Are there any other questions? Seeing none, Representative Hammonds, your numerous responses.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wish this was a game show where I'd win money at the end of answering these. We'll see. All right. It's fantastic. You guys are awesome. You're asking the exact same questions I was asking all summer. And so fortunately, I wanted to have a bill that was going to make a good law so that you felt really confident about it. And so a lot of the answers I'm giving to you are coming from the individuals at the Department of Transportation who are currently administering the existing ignition interlock device program. With regard to providers, there are 10 different manufacturers of this device in the country. There are several that offer it in Wyoming. And as we've given it time to ramp up, we feel the department feels confident that they'll be able to provide this across the state. And quite frankly, in the current economy, this might be a means for some of our local car dealers to have another additional business. But it is not that difficult to add it, and we do feel, the department feels confident that they'll be able to provide that. But there are existing providers in the state. And that was one thing I said, oh my gosh, if we don't have local businesses that can handle this, this becomes quite problematic. With regard to if you own multiple vehicles, quite frankly, I see this bill as a privilege. Existing law says you will not drive, period. And what this bill says is we will let you drive a vehicle that you buy an ignition interlock device for. And so if you happen to have multiple vehicles, one might think you have the means to put ignition interlock devices on the vehicles you plan to drive. And so that's the answer on that one for the individuals with multiple vehicles. With regard to enforcement, it is a monthly report, which led into the next question regarding what if your college buddies go and take your vehicle, and I don't think you have to be limited to just college buddies. I think you could have buddies who take your vehicle. It's on your record. There is no way to determine who actually blew into that. And so I wouldn't loan my car to my buddies. What if this had to do with regard to going to work, which we did work really hard on that particular provision. What if I drive to work and then my welding vehicle and then I go to soccer and then I drive home? That's what we're saying you can't do. And so the question was, you can only drive a vehicle that's your employer's vehicle that you drive during normal business hours, and you don't use it for any personal things at all. So the question is, who puts the ignition interlock device on this car that or this truck that you're going to be driving all the time? You're going to have to pay for it. You're going to have to do that if it's part of your work. The next question had to do with losing your license. This is for the people who are not willing to submit to the test if you're suspected of drunk driving, and you can do the various tests that the Highway Patrol might administer. Existing law says you lose your license. So all this is saying is this ties it into what will be the new law. If you have your license suspended, you have to have an ignition interlock device. And the reason why is if we take away people's licenses, which is the current system, what time has told us is that doesn't mean they stop driving. And so that's why that clause is added to it. Existing law says that their licenses are suspended. And also on page 9 on that one, that is existing language. And so all it's doing is adding, if your license is suspended, you have to have an ignition interlock device. The next part, from the good representative from the city we're in, I think I've addressed the provider issue, but so what can, if I have this thing, can I go out and have a drink with my buddies? Well, I tell you what, if you weigh as much as I do, you can't. If you weigh as much as the good representative from Park County, you might be able to drink a whole lot.
Point of order.
Point of order. When I was a trustee and they were debating whether we would serve beer at football games, they gave us a little chart about how much you can drink per hour and if you can drive safely home. And it was startling how little I can drink and drive. It really is based on weight and sex in terms of how much you can, which brings us to the next part. That's why this is part of an educational process for that individual. Many, many people in Wyoming do not know how much they can drink and they can safely operate a vehicle. And that's why we want to keep it that if you blow into it and find out, it won't start if I've had two beers, then the next day you can have one beer and see if it starts. I mean, it really is quite clearly an education for that person who's already in trouble with the law. Yes, it is. It is allowed because it's going to have a record. But remember when I said when you do your monthly report, the people looking at it are going to be looking for patterns. If you blow in it five successive times within an hour and it doesn't start versus if you're blowing in it every single day at a certain time and you're always smashed and trying to do it, they're going to talk to you about what are you doing? What are the choices you're making? Is this system working? That's what we're trying to change behavior. We've had a couple of questions about indigents paying for it. That's what they've done in New Mexico. That is a choice of the body. If someone doesn't have enough money to buy food for their family, which is demonstrated by food stamps, we're saying the state can chip in $25,000 to pay for their device. If this body disagrees with that, I would understand that feeling. The last question, which I thought was important, and it's something that I myself had really done a fair amount of research, and there are, if anybody wants to read research, we have extensive documents about that first offense and putting on an ignition interlock device for that first offense. There are 45 states that currently have ignition interlock device laws. Only 4 of them put it on the first offense. We have the data from New Mexico because when they first passed the law for mandatory, they only did it for second offense and up. After 1 year, they came back and put it on for the first year, too. And so we have their actual research that they've done in terms of the amount of people that came off the roads. My personal feeling on that one, it kind of reminds me of years ago I talked to a piano teacher, and he said when you're first teaching someone on the piano, it's almost not enough to see them once a week, because man oh man, if they practice it wrong for the whole week, by the time you get them back, it's almost impossible to change it. This is what, when somebody makes a mistake and drives drunk, on a first offense, what we're trying to do is to educate them and change their behavior. And so, do you keep it on for 6 months or do you keep it on for a year? What New Mexico has found is even after keeping it on for a year, when you take it off, some of them, a percentage, will go on to obtain a second DUI. And so the full year, in essence, you're training these people and you're keeping them off the roads drunk for another 6 months. That's what you're doing with that first one. But if this body thinks that a full year is too much, that is just a judgment call on your behalf in terms of human behavior. How long does it take to train somebody to change their behavior and to learn to not drink and drive at the same time?
Madam Majority Whip.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm a little bit concerned about page 9 and how it relates back to page 3 for a first conviction. Because I guess if you refuse to take the test, then under normal law, you're only guilty, right, if it's 0.08. But here, it's automatically assumed that you're at least a 0.15, and you're going to have the interlock device for the first year, for a whole year. So it's almost, Mr. Speaker shaking his head no, but, I mean, on page 3, you don't get the interlock device unless your concentration is 0.15 or more. Now, what the legal limit, I mean, for a first conviction, it's 0.08, right? So it's actually higher. 0.15 is higher than 0.08. So it's got to be 0.15 to get the interlock for a first conviction, yet if you refuse to take the test, you're automatically at the, at the 1 year. I just think that's too harsh for someone who just simply says, I'm not going to take the test.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Gingrey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a recommendation that Senate File 88 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, please say no. Senate File 88 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, after lunch, I think the schedule will be Senate File 3, Senate File 135, Senate File 129, Senate File 143, and Senate File 102. And then what we're going to do is rise and report so that we can do some re-referrals of bills, and then we'll come back at 2 and resolve ourselves back into Committee of the Whole. So, stand by. With that in mind, Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion carries.
Back away, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman.
Will the reading clerk please read the Committee of the Whole report?
Mr. Speaker, your Committee of the Whole, having had in consideration bills in general file, beg to leave report as follows. Senate File 49, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 94, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 107, amended, recommended, do pass. Senate File 14, recommended, do pass. Senate File 88, recommended, do pass. Signed, Representative Peterson, Chairman.
I move the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Thank you, Representative Peterson. We look forward to your another round this afternoon. Chairman Illaway. One more thing. Standing committee reports, please.
Mr. Speaker, your committee number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, to whom is referred Senate File 39 engrossed, respectfully reports same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Bonner, Davison, Esquivel, Goggles, Hallinan, Harvey, Landon, Millen. No, Shepperson. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman.
Chairman Landon.
Mr. Speaker, I request re-referral of Senate File 39 to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Announcements, please. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry to get rush ahead. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet right now at House 18 to finish up Senate File 118, Engrossed, Continuance of Insurance Coverage, and Senate File 80, Engrossed, Electrical Installation Exceptions.
Chairman Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee Appropriations number 2 will meet upon noon adjournment to hear Senate File 39, Child Health Insurance Program. And then, ladies and gentlemen, in case you have an opportunity, the butterfly bill will be signed at 1 o'clock today, and there will be cake available in the rotunda.
Chairman Cohey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, will meet 10 minutes upon adjournment tonight. That is February 26th in room 817 to discuss interim topics. And then the same committee will meet again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. That's February 27th in 817. with a Senate counterpart to discuss interim topics.
Thank you. Any other announcements? Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet Friday upon noon adjournment in room H18, and there'll be a joint meeting with the Senate side for interim topics.
Any other announcements? We are in recess until 2 p.m.